Chapter 4. Late the next afternoon, before sunset and after I rounded up my 35mm camera, I started for the Carver farm with Pat and Jackie in tow. We three had reasoned that Miss Evangeline would have no objection to their coming, since she said I could tell others about taking the pictures, just so I didn't give them the real reason. My pals could give me their viewpoints on the best shots of the farm and the angles from which to shoot. Besides, they were dying to see the historic place up close and personal. Even Jackie was more animated today than she had been. She had applied makeup and seemed her usual perky self. "Do you think Miss Evangeline is paranoid?" Pat asked as I recounted the first part of last evening and Miss Evangeline's statement that someone was trying to kill her. "She seemed absolutely normal," I said. "She talked 90 miles an hour, but she made perfect sense." I told them about the three instances when she might have come to real harm. "Did she go see Ron about her will today, Jackie?" Pat asked. "I don't know," Jackie said. "I didn't work in the office this afternoon, but she did make an appointment." "I brought the paper she gave me last night," I said, patting my purse. "It'll help me get the right pictures." We turned off the main road onto the Carver's private drive. Soon the mansion appeared over a knoll. The sun hung low in the west, lighting and warming the old bricks to a mellow glow. It was a charming, lovely scene. So why did I feel a shiver of apprehension as I looked at it? Pat gave voice to my feelings. "It's a gorgeous place, but I wouldn't live here if you paid me." Jackie frowned at her. "What a thing to say! I'd love to call this place home. Why, I can almost see ladies in hoop skirts, carriages coming and going." Pat turned to me. "Did you say Miss Evangeline believes in ghosts?" Jackie playfully swatted Pat's hand. "Don't start that ghost business. You don't have to imagine anything. The whole estate is fabulous just as it is in reality." "You're right," Pat agreed. "I don't know why I said what I did. It was just a sensation. Gone now." I parked and we got out of the car. "Wait a minute," I said, raising the camera to my face. "I can't resist getting a picture of the mansion now with the sun's last rays behind it. Doesn't it look grand?"
"It looks spooky," Pat muttered.
We trooped up the brick walk to the front door. I banged with the door knocker and we waited.
"That's funny," I said. "Last night she got to the door before I knocked. I thought she'd be all eager to meet us today and direct me to what she wants photographed first."
Once again, I knocked.
"I hope she hasn't fallen," Jackie said. "Try the door, Ned."
I turned the knob and the door swung open. Instead of being brightly lighted, the entry was shadowy and empty. I went in and called, "Miss Evangeline, I'm here for the pictures." My voice echoed eerily down the hall. I shivered and stepped back to join Jackie and Pat. This was strange. I pulled my phone from its holder. Maybe I should call her.
"Listen," Pat said. "I hear some people talking. Down that way," she pointed.
I heard them too. It was a relief to know we were not alone. "We'll follow their voices. Miss Evangeline may have been held up by some business with the gardener or someone," I said as I walked onto the graveled path that ran behind the house. We passed through carefully maintained gardens, beds of iris, an herb garden with a pergola, banks of shrubbery, and the entrance to the boxwood maze. The path led behind guest houses and under towering oak and magnolia trees. Corrals and barns loomed nearby. A half dozen men and women were standing inside the corral fence, talking and gesturing. They sounded upset. Six pairs of eyes stared at us as we walked up to the group. A tall, angular woman with gray hair that was pulled away from her face into a tight bun turned from gazing off into the distance as we approached.
"Who are you?" she asked, her voice shrill with suspicion. "Do you know where Evangeline is?"
"Miss Evangeline? Isn't she with you?"
"No," a short, balding man said. "No, she isn't. And we're beginning to get worried.
Who are you and why are you here? Do you know anything about her?
My heart speeded up. Miss Evangeline was missing?
I'm Ned McNeil, I said and introduced my friends. We have an appointment with Miss Evangeline.
A slim man, a little younger than I, dressed in jeans, boots, and a wide-brimmed hat, strode from the barn, leading a saddled roan horse. He tipped his hat.
Sorry if we're not up to being hospitable, ma'am, but we're all kind of worried. Miss Evangeline went for a ride earlier and hasn't returned yet.
I thought you were supposed to be keeping up with Evangeline when she was out on that mare of hers, accused the short man, frowning at him.
Evangeline isn't young. She shouldn't be allowed to ride at all, especially not by herself. If something has happened to her, I'll hold you responsible.
The slim man's eyes glinted.
And who's going to tell her to quit riding? You, Albert? I sure wouldn't. I was busy in the back pasture and thought Tyler here could unsaddle Melanie when she got back. So I didn't know Miss Evangeline hadn't come in from a ride until just a while ago.
A blonde-haired boy, I guessed him to be in his early 20s, strode to meet me, hand outstretched. I'm Tyler, ladies, and I work here too, with Ken. I thought that he had tended to Miss Evangeline after her ride and had no idea she was still out till Myra came to say she hadn't been to eat supper. He looked down at his boots and mumbled, "If I had checked the horse corral and stables, I'd realized Melanie wasn't here." A plump, gray-haired woman in a house dress and apron spoke, her voice quavery. "I sounded the alarm when she didn't show up for supper with the rest of the family."
"Are you Myra?" I asked around a lump that was beginning to form in my throat.
She nodded, wrapping her hands in her apron. The tall, skinny woman sniffed and stared at me.
"Just what kind of business did you have with Evangeline anyway? Is that a camera around your neck? We don't allow photographers to go roaming around, snapping pictures and selling them."
Her voice reminded me of a fingernail on a chalkboard.
"Now look," I said, feeling heat start up my neck. "I'm here because Miss Evangeline asked me to come. So I think you'd better talk with her if you don't agree with her decisions." The last person in our little tableau smiled and came toward me with her hand extended. "I'm Pearly Carver, Albert's wife. Our cousin Evangeline is very dear to us, and we are frantic with trying to guess where she might be. Forgive us for being blunt. This is my husband, Albert Carver." She gestured toward the balding man. "And she nodded toward the woman with the bun and caustic attitude, "is Vida Johnson, another cousin." I shook hands with Pearly, as did Pat and Jackie. Pearly was the most attractive of the group. Her ash-blonde hair was in a short, stylish cut, and her makeup subtly enhanced her complexion. Jackie had backed away from us and pulled her cell phone from her purse.
"Of course, Ron."
Miss Evangeline had made an appointment with Ron. Had she kept it? Slowly, Jackie replaced her phone and came back to stand beside me. Drawing a deep breath, she said,
"Miss Carver was planning to see my husband in his office this afternoon, but she didn't show up."
"An appointment with your husband?" Albert echoed.
"Why? Who is your husband?"
Jackie's eyes met mine, and she shrugged.
"He's a lawyer."
It was as if an electric shock ran through the Carver family.
"Lawyer?" Vida shrilled. "What would she want with a lawyer?"
Jackie smiled.
"That's something you would have to ask her, I'm afraid."
Ken swung up into his saddle.
"I'm going to ride over to the north pasture. That's where she usually goes. Surely she just lost track of time."
"I'll saddle up and follow you," Tyler said, starting toward the barn.
"Wait," Myra shouted. "Look, here comes Melanie."
A small gray mare trotted toward us. Her head was up, and she held it to one side to keep from stepping on her trailing bridle reins. Ken rode to meet her, and she shied away. At last he grabbed the reins and led her back to the corral. Silence fell on the entire group. Myra began to cry.
"She's nervous," Ken said. "Melanie is usually the gentlest little mount you could wish for, but she's excited about something tonight. Take care of her, Tyler. I'm going to find Miss Evangeline."
Ken whirled his horse and galloped off in the direction from which Melanie had come. The riderless mare was not a good sign. My heart was doing double time. I walked over to where Tyler stood, holding the quivering animal's reins. Her saddle had slipped, and the saddle blanket was halfway off. Remembering what Miss Evangeline had said about a thorn in the saddle blanket, I ran my hand along its underside. Nothing there that would startle Melanie. But what had happened? Why was she, who was usually placid, plainly excited? And where was Miss Evangeline? Tyler patted Melanie's neck and wordlessly led her into the stable. "I've got to keep busy," Myra muttered, trotting toward the house. "I'll bring us back some coffee." "Good idea, Myra. Thank you," Pearlie said. "I'm not leaving this corral until I know what happened to my cousin," declared Vida. "I'd like to stay," I said to Pat and Jackie. "Is that all right with you?" "Couldn't drag me away," Pat declared. "Me neither," Jackie agreed. 30 minutes later, Ken returned at a gallop.
"Did you find her?"
Albert asked. Ken swiped his hand across his eyes and nodded. In a choked voice, he said, "She's lying out there in the grass. Looks like Melanie threw her, and she hit her head on a rock. Miss Evangeline, I'm afraid she's dead." I felt as if someone had sloshed a bucket of ice water over me. My friends and I joined hands, and Pat bit her lip. Evangeline's family stood with shocked, white faces. Myra, newly arrived with a tray and coffee cups, softly sobbed. "I'm calling an ambulance," Ken said. "It's no use, but I'm calling one." "Call the sheriff, too," I told him. "And I'm calling Cade Morris." No one objected.